But anyway, it went on until late November that his cousin, Louis Green, who worked for ZCMI up there, retail, and they also had a wholesale grocery place at Idaho Falls. Well, his father-in-law, Leonard Ball, had a store. He just evicted somebody in it, and it was empty, but he'd gone in and cleaned it and repainted it and made better shelves, made it more modern. So Glenn went up with his, met his cousin, they went up and talked to him, and he came back and said, we're moving to Idaho. Well, I didn't like moving to Idaho, but it was worse. It was a farming community, and that I didn't like. I love to visit relatives on the farm, but not to live.
I'm with you, Dennis, too.
Because they have septic tanks or cesspools and stuff, and not all of them had that. But anyway, that's where we ended up at.
What year was that?
And we moved the 12th. No, we left Ogden. We had it all packed for the 12th of December. Now I was going to say what. Anyway, it was still 31, or 32, I mean, because our baby was born in October of 1932. Well, anyway, come this day, we had everything packed the night before, and he had it in the garage at his mother's place, and we went to get it the next morning, and we couldn't start it. It was 22 below in Ogden.
Wow.
A lot of people don't believe that now, but I heard a comparison this summer, and they had it mentioned it, Utah was 22 below on in December of that year. Well, anyway, they spent a whole day to get it started, so we left it in the garage downtown. So the next day, the 13th, we finally went up and we got to Idaho Falls, and we asked them, where is Ammon? How do you get out? We know where it is, but no one knew how to tell us to get there. Anyway, we finally come. I finally got there, and for a week, well, he went ahead and he ordered stuff, and they loaned him the money. The guy wanted him, you know, in and have his store going, because it'd make money for him, because he's losing when it was empty. So he loaned him the money, so, and it was $400, and it filled the store, but $400 now would only just do a tiny corner in the store compared to that day. But everything looked more modern, except they had just one wire hanging with a light bulb, four or five of them, in this big store. So the first thing my husband did was go and buy regular lights, you know, for grocery stores. But he kept all his stuff. And there was no cabinets. We built them, but we built it so we could move them as furniture. So when we could go. Well, anyway, the very first spring that I was there, I was alone at the store, and here come an old lady into the store, and she told me her name was Mrs. Jolly, and she'd just come down from the hills, and which was east of Ammon, and she said, oh, I stay there all winter every year because there's no road to get out. They're not plowed, and it still isn't very much. And I said, well, what in the world did you do all that time? Well, she says, I take magazines and books, and the radio didn't catch it up there. And then she said, a very homely expression, but it's true, nobody needs to be a jassack if they will only read. And I thought that was very good. You don't have to always be in school. And if you don't have the opportunity, you can still find things to make things better, learn about. But I thought that was a home expression, but it's sure true.
Yeah, that
really well, so anyway, that's the way things were. It looked like, you know, in the shows, showed, you know, old time pioneer stuff and all this. Well, the next day here come a man in, he had a red plaid jacket, and he had long beard, hair was long, and I don't know, he bought some little thing, and he told me his name was Winder. Well, later in the day, while I was still alone, he came back, and he said, I bet you never seen me before, and you don't know me. And I thought it was just like a movie, you know, Wild West. And Harry's whiskers were gone, and his hair was cut. And he said, "I bet you haven't." And I said, "Oh, yes, you're Mr. Winder."
Huh.
And he couldn't see how I could because of his changed appearance. But it was his plaid jacket that gave him away, this bright red. But I thought it was interesting. Anyway, we were there and finally built our own store building. Then he was called into the service. And I took care of the store for about 2 years. And then we come back. I had saved a lot of money while he was gone, and we built a bigger place. And he was renting that store when he died. And we brought him to Ogden to bury him with the two children we had. First a girl, Donna Mae, and then that was in Ogden. And the boy was in Idaho Falls, Gene Knight Furnace, G-E-N-E. I want the same initials, Glenn, but I don't want to have a repeat of the name.
What day was he born?
December 11th,
1937. In Ammon?
No, Idaho Falls.
Idaho Falls.
A hospital. See, I went, that's where he was born. But he died in Ammon, and we buried him in Ogden. And Glenn died in Ammon from a heart attack, a massive heart attack. October 18th, 1958, 1 year after his mother died.
Wow.
Same month.
Was he were in the store at the time?
No, he was just getting up in the morning to go after milk. We sold gallons of milk, and he'd have to go to the dairy and pick it up before store opened. And I was going to go over the store when it opened, but I didn't have to get up and go as early. He'd start about 6:30, and he'd come in the bedroom and got some clean socks and stuff out, and he came over and put his arm around me, squeezed me, and I thought, that's kind of unusual for him, but knowing I was trying to sleep for another half hour. And then I heard him in the front room, and I thought he was kidding. You know, my husband's a great kidder. And so I thought, well, no, that sounds too real. And I went out, and he was rolling on the floor in such terrible pain. And he said, "What am I going to do about the milk and stuff?" And I said, "Oh, you just lay down and I'll go over and take care of the store. Maybe you'll feel better later." Because he did know he had a heart problem, which he didn't tell many people. And so he said, "Okay." So I got him to lay down. And I said, "Have you taken any of your tablets that the doctor had given him?" And he said, "I've taken two of them, but they're not working." And he said, and then I thought, "Oh, I better hurry and get dressed." I dashed to the bathroom and started to wash and that, and Glenn came in and said, "Oh, I've got to throw up." So he knelt down and started to throw up. Nothing came. Well, it was terrible to watch life leave his body. And then he just collapsed and fell back. So I pulled his legs out straight, just in case, and I forgot about his arm. One of his arm went across here, and they never could take her out, that red blotch in that one ear. Everybody that come to look at it knows, was telling me about it.
He had a big bruise on his forehead where he hit.
Well, anyway, I called the doctor, not the one he'd been going to. He got provoked over something. He didn't go to our regular doctor, or I would have known, because I have to go ever so often. So I didn't know all this stuff until he started taking pills. And then I walked in the store one day from the house, and he was talking to a lady. They were comparing pills, and she'd had several heart attacks, and that was my introduction to knowing that he had a heart problem.
He didn't tell you. You had to learn it the other way.
He didn't tell anything. And he would. So I had been praying. We were had so many problems that I prayed to the Lord that relief would come, or we could find a buyer or something. But and then all of a sudden, the last month or so, I kept saying, "But not death." And I wondered why in the world I was praying that way. So anyway, I called this doctor and told him that Glenn had collapsed. And he said, "I'll come right out. Just to put something over him, keep him warm. And I'm sure in about 10 minutes he'll get up." But in 10 minutes, he didn't get up. So I called him back, and it was the opening of the deer season, and the doctor himself was going to take his son out. He was in you know, clothes, you know, plaid uh-huh. stuff and old, you know, and red and stuff would go out and take uh-huh. his first son for their deer hunt. And he came out to Ammon, and he couldn't get through on the road that we did because Idle Falls was building a big, well, something to take the sewer stuff to their plant from uh-huh. way out. And Ben had gone in and talked to him and asked Idle Falls, why don't you make it bigger so Ammon can join on it? In the meantime, it was because of Glenn's effort that we got water to Ammon.
Huh.
And he was on the village board, and he got $12 a year for it. That's when they pulled him out and sent him to the army. And then he had to go back. The doctor had to go back into town and go up to First Street. And then there's about 2 miles coming south to hit our place. But as a kid, he used to ride a motorcycle out there, so he knew where we were. He just walked in and looked at him, stuff, and he said, you already know he's dead, don't you? So anyway, he stayed with me till we got somebody. But the bishop was up heading. He'd gone. His wife knew exactly because the deer eat off of their fields and the hills all summer. And their venison and their tastes almost natural because of their food they ate. And anyway, they finally got help, and I got the former Relief Society president, whom I worked with. She hadn't been out too long. And they came in, and then I called Vaughn, and I thought, I guess if I call him, he could call all the members and call Omer's brother.
And Glenn's brother.
Let him know about it. And I, Vaughn had had a heart condition. He hadn't had a bad heart attack then, but a heart condition. So I asked him, he's sitting down, was he alone? He said, yeah, Marie's gone to take care of some of the grandkids or something. So I told him, and he gave me some ideas what to do, and they were the first to arrive in my folks. Of course, I had Viola and Elmer Belknap 9 miles away in another town, but they came as soon as they got their animals fed. They came, and Zola Rick stayed right with me, and so did Keith Hansen. He was a counselor to the bishop, and the bishop's wife had sent somebody to hunt her husband to bring him back.
You talk about Della, but don't make it so long.